The Koi Gig Pod.
You know, Arsenal are still mathematically going for the title. You know, it's going to be an intense run in for them. And then we've got huge internationals again coming up, and it puts a lot of pressure.
Subscribe to The Koi Gig Pod on the Off The Ball app now.
Off The Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
All right, very good morning to you. It is Thursday on a Friday. Friday on a Thursday here, it'd be more accurate. Shane and Adrian are here. Also, Chris Jones, Louise Galvin, John Duggan and Keane Tracy is going to do. You had to be there for us. So a busy, varied show. And we're also in France, in Metz. Lovely, lovely Metz. Kathleen, good morning to you.
Bonjour, bonjour. Where are you on Metz? Okay, in my hotel room because it is absolutely lashing rain.
Oh, no.
So I'm not able to show you guys any proper scenes. Just yet, anyways. Maybe tomorrow morning it's supposed to be a bit better.
So you flew into Luxembourg and got a train or a bus? Or how close is Metz to Luxembourg?
It's actually not too bad. So flew to Luxembourg, got a free bus into the city, which took about 10, 15 minutes. And then there was a delay on the train. So I did spend about an hour and a half on Luxembourg platform, which did bring me back to Perth a little bit. I was getting a little bit of PTSD from that. But then it's only like 40 minutes on a train. So it's actually very handy.
Okay. And any sense of what the city is like? Is it I know nothing about Metz. Is it big? Is it small?
It's relatively small, so it's about 120,000 people population-wise. Had a bit of a wander around yesterday evening. Seems like quite a sleepy little city. It's really beautiful, very French, lots of beautiful old buildings and lots of like nice little wine bars and stuff. But yeah, I would say definitely a very chill city, but nice. And hopefully the rain is supposed to clear later tonight, and it's supposed to be about 25 degrees tomorrow, so that will probably make for a nicer viewing for the game, because the game's actually at 9 o'clock French time tomorrow night, so it's quite late.
Okay, so France versus Ireland, 9 o'clock local time, 8 o'clock our time. France expected to win this quite comfortably, given that they're one of the best teams in the world, according to themselves, although also notorious chokers when it comes to championships.
Yep. If you were to look at it on paper, you would say that tomorrow night it is going to be an absolute hammering. But also we have seen with this Irish team that when there is an expectation of them against some of the bigger teams, they are actually able to pull out a performance. I think the choking that France has experienced has probably gone a little bit in the last few years since Hervé Renard took over. I think a lot of that came from their relationship with their manager, Karine Diacre, who was in before, who just didn't treat the team well, cut out their highest goal scorer, Eugène Lesommer. So I think we're going to see a much more polished French team than we have seen in the past, but we have the experience of playing against them in Tala. We know what we're up against, and we have the added addition of having players like Aoife Mannion back, bringing Anna Patton in, who is playing at the top level in the WSL. So I think we're probably in a better position now than we were when we played them before the World Cup, especially having the experience of those high pressure occasions. But anything can happen on the night as well.
This is the bit where it's be careful what you wish for, / this is where your dreams start to come true, right? And that's the unknown is how we're going to respond to stepping up in the level of competition. You win every game in your group in Division 2, you get to Division 1 and it's like, ooh, okay, we're playing with the big kids now.
Exactly. I'm not going to say we're going to do like a fairy tale situation where from the World Cup over the next like 4 or 5 years, we're going to do a Derry and suddenly win Division 1 in one of the most exciting matches that has ever happened. But I think we were talking about it on the Koi Gig podcast on Monday with Karen, and looking at these games, ideally what you would love is getting a draw or something tomorrow night that kind of gives us a bit of faith going into the next couple of games. Even winning relatively, even if France win, if it's not a massive absolute hiding, I think that'll serve us well going into the next couple of games, because we have England at the Aviva. It's a home game. That's going to be even tougher. And then we look at the likes of Sweden, and I know Kira Caruso was talking about it, and she has 3 or 4 Swedish teammates over in the US, and she was saying that they were actually worried about getting Ireland because of how we had performed against them in campaigns past. So there is definitely potential for us in this group in the same way there was probably potential for us in the World Cup group. It's just if we're mature enough to grab it and we've taken the lessons from the earlier Nations League campaign and saying, okay, we can't play that sort of free-flowing football that we did where we let Katie McCabe and Denise O'Sullivan roam in the way we did. But we also learned that Caitlin Hayes is a really great asset when it comes to attacks alongside the like of Louise Quinn. So, well, I suppose just moulding those things with a bit of reality.
Any sign of Lorraine Argent, the Silver Fox?
Pronunciation was excellent there, by the way.
No sign as of yet, but I haven't had too much time. I was in late enough last night, so.
It's such an interesting story. I know we have had some titillation about Irvine Arr on the show over the last couple of months. Catherine, you've been central to a lot of that, by the way, so I hope you'll front up now in the press conference.
It was the main talking point on the 20-minute bus ride that the journey
was it?
Had, yeah.
So, like, it's an interesting story for people who aren't aware. Can you, like, you know, his relationship with the French Football Federation, his, you know, I might just head over to Africa here for a couple of months to help out the Ivory Coast over the last little while, and he ain't hanging around very long either way with France.
No, he is. It was kind of a shock when he came into the French women's team in the first place, because he has absolutely no relationship to women's football whatsoever, but has come in and taken what was a bit of a messed up side where the relationship between the manager and the players was really, really tenuous. All their top players were saying they were going to retire because of the way the manager was treating people. He's come in, absolutely won over the players, did relatively well with them in the World Cup. I think they'll be a little bit disappointed. Got to that Nations League final and then announced just before the end of by the end of the Olympics, he's going to move on again. So he wasn't there all that long. I think it's been about a 2-3 years. And he, I think there's a lot of disappointment in French circles that he was moving on because he was so well respected, but clearly another little shiny thing has come into his view and he's like, ah, yes, I want some of that.
The Jared mentioned about the free bus, by the way. What? Like their local sort of council are not trying to screw people for every single... There's an opportunity to make money here, Kathleen. What's happening?
Apparently it started during COVID. So Luxembourg had one of the strictest COVID lockdowns that there were. And, you know, there was a limit on how long you could be out. You couldn't be out past 11 o'clock at night. And so to encourage people to stay off the streets, they basically brought in this free bus scheme. And then whenever COVID ended, people just had got so used to it that Luxembourg, being the country that it is with a little bit of money, was like, we'll just keep it. So yeah, all the buses in Luxembourg are free.
It's like the Lewis was free during the lockdown and it's still free.
Still free.
Lewis is free. Yeah. Don't pay for the Lewis.
That did take me a split second to catch up with that. But so the team have had to get, they couldn't get a hotel in Metz, Kathleen. Is that the story? So they had to go to Luxembourg and get special dispensation.
Yeah, so they couldn't find somewhere to stay here, which is interesting because I didn't find it particularly difficult. But maybe when you're bringing a squad of 26 players plus management, it's harder to find somewhere. So I think they're staying about 45 minutes. It's kind of like halfway between Luxembourg and Metz, which isn't that unusual. Like last year when they were at the training camp in Marbella, they were a good hour away from the pitch. So they're kind of used to staying maybe a little bit outside of where they're playing. The stadium itself isn't that far from the city centre. I looked it up last night. It's like a 10-minute walk and from where I am, and I'm in the centre of the town. So it's a very small city. I can see why there may not have been the space or what they're looking for. I assume they need like gym facilities and stuff, so there may just not have been a place with that in the city.
I've been busy here doing research on things to do in Metz. There's not a whole pile. There's the German Gate. There's the Metz Cathedral. There's a couple of shopping centres and famous people. You did say, Kathleen, it was quite small. Morgan Parra was probably the most famous person out of Metz.
Very good.
First person to fly in a hot air balloon was also apparently from Metz as well.
New Orlingo now, Shane.
Yeah, love that. Jean-Francois Pilatre de Rosier, who lived from 1757 to 1785.
Say it with confidence and quickly and you'll be grounded.
Exactly. Not rolling off the tongue.
No. So yeah, not much to do.
German Gate.
German Gate in France.
I went to see the cathedral last night. It is actually quite beautiful. It was just the rain had just cleared. And you know, when the sun starts to shine through the clouds and everywhere looks, there's a big grey stormy sky behind it, but the light was shining directly on the cathedral. It was quite pretty.
Oh, very nice. Courtney Brosnan is in the papers this morning. She obviously did press yesterday saying, no, we didn't have to talk to Emma Byrne. I didn't need to. We're all professional. And if we did need to have a conversation, we would have been professional about it. So I'm not sure. Did they have to have a clear the air meeting at all? Maybe they did.
I don't know. I feel like by the time that Emma went into the camp, she had fully changed her opinion on Courtney Brosnan. Obviously, we've had her on the Koi Gig Pod, and we would talk about Courtney quite a bit because Emma's the number one Irish goalkeeper that we've had. So, and Courtney is probably going to get close to usurping her if she continues on the way that she is. And Emma would always say, I know she had said in the past that she didn't think that Courtney should be Ireland's number one, and that's because she wasn't playing consistently. And even at the start of this season, before Emma got the Ireland gig, and it was looking a little bit dodgy as to whether Courtney was actually going to maintain that number one spot with Everton, even though she was performing so well, Emma was still a little bit on the fence about whether she should be starting goalkeeper despite everything that she'd done. She was very much of the opinion that Courtney should have not signed the contract with Everton before the World Cup and instead moved on and tried to get somewhere where she isn't a starting berth to ensure that she was fit for Ireland and, you know, keeping herself tight and focused for Ireland. So I think she definitely, she changed her opinion. If she was still saying, I don't know if Courtney's the right person, there probably would have needed to have been a conversation, but she has always been very, very full of praise for Courtney in the last like two seasons, I would say.
Okay, so peace broke out in advance and it's all grand now.
It's an interesting one though, isn't it? Like pundits who become pundits but also want to get back into the coaching game. Like we saw Brian Kerr quite recently as well, that it wasn't exactly a mea culpa coming out after the two friendlies and saying, well, maybe I was wrong about this team or some of these players, but it kind of was a mea culpa in some ways as well. So it leads to an awkward conversation potentially if you want to dip your toes in punditry but still have a...
Well, when Roy Keane makes that plunge in collection,
that's going to be pretty awkward. Yeah.
Well, we actually did a really good episode of the Koi Gig podcast with Emma on that whenever it was announced that she was going to be joining the Ireland team permanently and that she would be leaving Koi Gig as a result, because I assume it's a little bit awkward to talk about the players that you then have to go see whenever there's an international window. But she talked about that and how different she found it for the Nations League campaign, the last one, being in camp and actually seeing the players face to face and seeing what they're going through and how high the intensity was in the camp. And it wasn't necessarily what she expected, having been on the outside of it for so long. So I think they're probably, I think we can all admit, working in the media, that we are working with what we see in front of us. And we're never going to know what it's like to be involved in the inner workings of a setup unless there's some particularly strange reason that we end up there. So you're always going to see a little bit more and find out a little bit more about what is going on. And also you have the added thing of, well, now I'm on the team. I'm not looking at it from the outside. These are my people. So I'm going to view it a little bit differently than someone who's sitting on the outside and able to criticize or compliment. Like, it could go either way as well. You could walk in and say, wow, I thought this was bad and it's actually 10 times worse.
Mm. Yeah, well, that would go down very well. Mick McCarthy always used to say, you're either on the outside pissing in or you're inside pissing out. And as no one, I think, has ever put it more eloquently.
Kathleen, can I ask you one?
You're adding some finesse to my point, Ger.
Yeah. Kathleen, as someone who has been around this Irish team for a number of years and obviously visited there or went over to the World Cup with them, have you noticed a change in attitude of the players? You know, when you see them walking around training sessions, training camps in Abbottstown, is there an added air of, not cockiness, but confidence that they've now, you know, done and achieved something that they always set out to do in terms of qualifying for a major tournament? Is there a difference, is basically what I'm asking you, in this Irish team and their demeanour now than there was, say, maybe 2, 3, 4 years ago?
I think when you're talking to them, there probably is an added confidence of, well, we have achieved these things now and it's not just a pie in the sky idea for us anymore. I don't know if their demeanor necessarily has changed with it. The other time you kind of notice it would be, say, after games now, because there's way more people at games and things. It's like a little bit harder for the players to get over to people as much. And sometimes you see there's like a little bit of frustration because people are, you know, putting a lot of pressure on them to give away booths or sign placards or sign jerseys or whatever it is. So it's probably those little elements that I've noticed more than their demeanor on the pitch. I think we're still a little bit at the stage where, yeah, we got to the World Cup and that was great, but we almost need to get to the next major tournament to cement that that wasn't just a once-off. And I think the players are aware of that. So any sort of cockiness for them or idea that they've gone and achieved what they want to do isn't there just quite yet.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow, Kathleen. We'll let you go and explore the many sights of Metz. A note from Cameron, our actual francophile, as opposed to some of the Sudes that we have around here. Symbolist poet Paul Verlaine, also from Metz. He added the word poet there. It was symbolist. And I was like, oh, is that somebody just plays the symbols? But it turns out, no, he's...
it's more than that.
He's a poet noted for his something, something, something symbolism. Anyway, there you go.
I love that.
There you go. Thank you. I will go and amaze the people of Metz with all the knowledge that I've...
Your Verlaine interest. Kathleen, thanks very much.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.